Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jai Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. So, yesterday we began to speak about the point in the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu begins to directly reveal his transcendental identity. Many different points came up in that regard. We first discussed how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was beginning to show his identity to various devotees. Actually, the first one was Advaita Acharya, and then it was followed by Srivas Thakur, and eventually there was the Mahaprakash pastime where the Lord was revealing his transcendental identity for 21 hours. And after that, we discussed a little bit how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in different ways was acting in an unusual transcendental way. Different questions came up. And at the end, one question was asked by Tattvavit Prabhu about the difference between Vaikuntha and Golok Vrindavan. And today he has brought us a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 47, text 62. The goddess of fortune herself, along with Lord Brahma and all the other demigods, who are masters of yogic perfection, can worship the lotus feet of Krishna only within her mind. But during the rasa dance, Lord Krishna placed his feet upon these gopis' breasts, and by embracing those feet, the gopis gave up all distress. So that's the difference, huh? That says just that one verse you wanted me to read, huh? Yeah. So that's like definitely a substantial difference between Vaikuntha and Golok. I think that as we are entering deeper in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, more points will be made on this topic because there's just that one particular area where the goddess of fortune is desiring to enter into the rasa dance, which is described several times. And at one point we'll get to that and how she could not enter and why she could not enter. And there the difference between the goddess of fortune and the gopis of Vrindavan is further delineated. Today, I wanted to kind of... I wasn't quite sure where to go from here. Yesterday, I kind of took it all the way up to the point where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was about to take sannyas. But I wasn't sure if we would let that all happen today, or if we would just delay that, postpone that a little bit more, the sannyas of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and if we would just draw back a little bit on the earlier descriptions and maybe a little more general. Because for me, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is very inspiring. And it's not just because of the pastimes. Many people take it that the CC is a book of pastimes and that the juice is all in the pastimes. But I myself, for me, the juice is oftentimes in the Siddhanta. I find that it is a book where Siddhanta is so clearly defined and everything is so... so nicely spelled out by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and then Prabhupada in his purports also takes that mood of like refining Siddhanta. The commentaries on the Chaitanya Charitamrita from both Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is called Anubhasya, and the commentary of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, these two are very important. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary is called Amrita Pravaha Bhasya, and they are both referred to many times, and many matters of tattva are being clarified. So I thought that before going in into another lila kind of thing, I would today first discuss a little bit more in general and then see what happens. First thing I thought was to show, though, a little bit that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always a preacher. And if we look in the Adi Lila, then we remember that from the very moment of his appearance, he was a preacher. And because he appeared at the time of the eclipse and the chanting of the holy name was going on, or as a baby, he would cry and could only be stopped by the chanting of the holy name. So there already, from his very appearance, he was a preacher. And also, as a small child, he was a preacher in different ways. And one of the pastimes, again, I like, is the one where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eating dirt. Right? It's nice that he's eating dirt for different reasons. For one thing, it's nice that he's eating dirt because Krishna was also eating dirt. But Mother Yasoda somehow or other, Mother Yasoda, Mother Sachi, she doesn't think about that, you know, that my son is eating dirt, Krishna was also eating dirt. That never crosses her mind. But it's interesting that he does that. Just these little subtle hints, you know, that he is Krishna, he's eating dirt. But because he is, while eating dirt, coming as a preacher, in this incarnation, he is not in the same mood as Krishna. He's coming in a different mood. He's coming to preach also. Therefore, this time, when he was eating dirt, he's coming to smash Mayavad, which is nice. So we'll read a little from that. 1424. One day, while the Lord was enjoying his playful sports with the other little children, Mother Sachi brought a dish filled with fused rice and sweetmeats and asked the child to sit down and eat them. But when she returned to her household duty, the child, hiding from his mother, began to eat dirt. Seeing this, Mother Sachi hastily returned, exclaiming, "What is this? What is this?" She snatched the dirt from the hands of the Lord and inquired why he was eating it. Crying, the child inquired from his mother, "Why are you angry? You have already given me dirt to eat. What is my fault?" Fused rice, sweetmeats, or anything eatable is all but a transformation of dirt. This is dirt, that is dirt. Please consider, what is the difference between them? This body is a transformation of dirt, and the eatables are also a transformation of dirt. Please reflect upon this. You are blaming me without consideration. What can I say? Astonished that the child was speaking Mayavad philosophy, Mother Sachi replied, "Who has taught you this philosophical speculation that justifies eating dirt?" Replying to the Mayavad idea of the child philosopher, Mother Sachi said, "My dear boy, if we eat earth transformed into grains, our body is nourished and it becomes strong. But if we eat dirt in its crude state, the body becomes diseased instead of nourished, and thus it is destroyed. In a water pot, which is a transformation of dirt, I can bring water very easily. But if I poured water on a lump of dirt, the lump would soak up the water and my labor would be useless." The Lord replied to his mother, "Why did you conceal self-realization by not teaching me this practical philosophy in the beginning? Now that I can understand this philosophy, no more shall I eat dirt. Whenever I'm hungry, I shall suck your breast and drink your breast milk." After saying this, the Lord smiling slightly, climbed on the lap of his mother and sucked her breast. Thus, under various excuses, the Lord exhibited his opulences as much as possible in his childhood. And later, after exhibiting such opulences, he hid himself. So it is nice that already Lord Chaitanya, in his childhood, is going through this pastime where his mother is defeating the Mayavad philosophy, which later becomes one of the main activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because this Mayavad philosophy is diametrically opposed to Krishna consciousness. Mayavad philosophy is declaring devotional service to be Maya. It is declaring the form of Krishna to be Maya. It is declaring the spiritual world to be Maya. So it is really denying everything that Krishna consciousness is all about and that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach. So obviously it was the first objective to wipe out the Mayavad philosophy. However, at the same time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is said, had his internal purpose for appearing in this world. And just when he was himself kind of getting eager to experience the mood of Srimati Radharani, it just happened to coincide with the time for spreading the Yuga Dharma. Right? So it said that was incidental. That wasn't like premeditated. It just coincided. And then the Lord appeared to do that work. Nonetheless, we should understand that it's equally ecstatic. It's equally transcendental. That is a point I also made yesterday. And maybe we can elaborate on that a little bit more. Today, I have a clipboard which we can hand around as well, and we can also write questions on the board. So if you want, then there's the clipboard. You can write down questions on here, and then we save them for later. We did this in other temples. It worked well with the clipboard. Some people feel more inspired about clipboards. I don't know why. But it works. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching activities are fully transcendental. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is performing them, he is displaying he's displaying all Ras. Ras is there. Like, that is the thing about these stories. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is actually performing this pastimes, it's a very rasic pastime in the sense that there is a complete exchange between him and his devotees. So one can never see any difference. In one sense, the devotee is always in Vrindavan. It is said that Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. We find that mentioned in a commentary on the 10th canto, first chapter, by Madhavacharya, who is stating that Vrindavan, or Mathura, he says, Mathura is a state of consciousness. So this is a fact. And Prabhupada, of course, many times mentioned that one cannot just go to Vrindavan by some travel agent or some travel arrangement, but one must be there in consciousness. And we find a similar description when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'm coming to the point of him taking sannyas anyway. After taking sannyas, he met Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya at one point said to him, "My Lord, wherever you are is Vrindavan." So wherever the Vaishnava is, he is in Vrindavan, he's in the spiritual world. And in that sense, that means because he has that intimate relationship with Krishna in all activities. So this is the nice thing about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that it is that is a unique thing. If we look at all the different religious traditions or spiritual quests that different people in the world are practicing or have practiced, it's always dealing with this Well, first of all, the first basic problem is that the Lord is not visible, right? And the spiritual world is not visible, right? One cannot perceive it. Therefore, it is necessary for some sort of process to bring about a change of consciousness, some purification, whatever it may be, before one can actually perceive the Lord and before one can perceive His transcendental abode, pastimes, whatever. So this is the first problem. So different traditions are all trying to, by some process of either meditation or of austerity, prayer, in these ways, they're trying to bridge that gap. They're trying to get into the other ethereal realm. But Krishna consciousness is different, because Krishna consciousness brings the ethereal realm right here. It points out that the ethereal realm is here. It's not that there's a need to focus on another world. Yes, of course, that other world is there. It is part of reality. But that, in due course of time, one's ability to perceive reality will extend, because the Lord will reveal transcendental knowledge within the heart. But the point is that already here on this planet, everything is there to fully experience the spiritual reality. Whereas, like we see, for example, well, in other approaches, we see the idea that you do charity so that you get blessings, and then after you get the reward, you get the realization of the spiritual realm, you're taken there. You go to heaven or you go to Valhalla or whatever. It's always a process which eventually will bring one to the goal. But in Krishna consciousness, it's immediately here. Like, for example, one can say that there are descriptions how in the Astakaliya Lila, the gopis are cleaning the kunjas where Krishna is being received along with Srimati Radharani. Each of the Astasakis maintain their own kunjas around Radha Kund, and the Lord goes there at different times in the day. And then in those kunjas, we see how various gopis, various manjaris are rendering their assisting service. And it is described how one of them was sweeping the marble floor with her hair, with her long hair. She untied and sweeping the floor with her hair. All right, that may be in such conditions. But there is no difference in sweeping that floor with the hair or sweeping the temple floor with a broom. I mean, the same capacity for Ras is available. The same capacity for the service relationship with Krishna is there. It doesn't depend on anything external. So this is very nice, that Krishna consciousness, therefore, makes this practical reality, the everyday, immediately accessible reality, totally surcharged with all spiritual potency. And that it's not the conditions where we are in that are the impediment, but that it is our consciousness that is the impediment, and that simply we can engage all things in the service of Krishna immediately, right? And be actually in the spiritual world. So that is a unique aspect of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which we do not find anywhere else. In that way, instead of reaching higher than any other philosophy, in one sense you can say, showing that the highest is in the lowest, right? Which is, any other tradition basically has to reject the material world. Right? It's say, like, this is Maya. This is just to be rejected. But in Krishna consciousness, this is not to be rejected. Rather, it is simply to, its proper purport is to be understood. Its proper application is to be understood. And this is, in relation to the preaching work of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in relation to the inner purpose of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to taste the intimacy of the spiritual world, we can understand that there is no difference. Because as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was preaching, he was in the spiritual world, and he was acting as a resident of the spiritual world, as a devotee, and he was in that way engaging the material energy completely on the perfect spiritual platform. And everything became spiritual. And this is the old example of iron in fire. It has become fire, right? So matter is actually spirit. And in one conversation with Allen Ginsberg, Prabhupada is asked by Ginsberg about deity worship, that how it's possible that a deity is a material thing. How can you capture the absolute in matter? Right? And from the onset, Prabhupada just defeats him. Prabhupada just basically says, matter doesn't exist. There is no matter. Right? That's just a matter of perspective. But actually, in reality, there is no matter. Right? Everything is spirit. And that settled that. So he took the debate in the other direction. And that is actually our philosophy. So, I thought I should make that point. I don't know if there are any comments on that or anything. Otherwise, I'll just go on to a different topic.
Well, first of all, every atom and every particle is Krishna's energy. Right? It is Krishna's very energy. And then Krishna enters again into that energy. So it was already Krishna's energy. It's not that matter is material and then Krishna surcharges it by entering into it. No, it's just his energy. It is said, yatarbhaka pratibimba, like a boy playing with his own energy, Krishna is just simply able to experience his own energy. There is nothing else outside Krishna's energy. That's why it's all spiritual. It's all his energy. So how can it be anything but spiritual?
Best for preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yes. Anyway, it's like one reason why I want to make this point is because we find that people, as soon as we read that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's preaching activities are incidental and that his real inner purpose was, you know, the experience of Radharani's mood, then we find in many people a tendency to kind of dismiss one thing as secondary and less important. And that's why I just had to say it. I had to establish philosophically that there is no difference, you see. It's important that we see that we cannot make that distinction. The distinction is, in one sense, artificial. Just like matter and spirit are artificial separations. In one sense, it's all spirit, and all Chaitanya's Mahaprabhu's activities are equally ecstatic. Like, years ago, someone mentioned the point that we should not only see how great the mountain of achievements of Srila Prabhupada is, but we should also understand how deep he is. And then when I heard that statement, I was thinking about it, you know, I was pondering on it, and then I was thinking, yeah, but wait a minute, it's the mountain of his achievement. So he made it with his own hand. So if you make a mountain with your own hand, right, then in the ground, you get a hole which is just as deep as the mountain you made. Yeah? It's like the amount of dirt you move from there, that makes your mountain. So there's no difference. Yeah? So I felt it was distinctly like that, that there is no difference between Prabhupada's inner meditation and Prabhupada's preaching, or Lord Chaitanya's inner meditation and his preaching. It is all part of the same thing. Yeah? It's not that Prabhupada had to spend all this time just preaching to all these Mayavadis, all these atheists and all that, and then finally, you know, like after that, focus on Krishna. No. And we ourselves in the same way, if we think that yes, there's more juice in one thing than in another, then we are not yet accessing the actual juice. The actual juice is in being the servant. And if we are thinking that one type is better than another, and if we think that, well, preaching is austere and Vrindavan being in the Holy Dham is all nectar, that means that we are still in the spirit of enjoyers and not in the spirit of servant, because otherwise we wouldn't make that distinction. Yeah. And now I don't want to get on anybody's case, you know, like in this presentation, not at all. But what to do? This enjoying spirit is very deep in us, and in the first instance, the enjoying spirit is there to enjoy the material energy. And in the second instance, the enjoying spirit is to enjoy the spiritual energy. Yeah, the tendency to... But that is still also to be given up. One has to come to the point of being totally the servant. We see like the classical example of Daruka, who became overwhelmed by his ecstatic symptoms and didn't like these symptoms because it interrupted with his service. So the service had become more important than the enjoying spirit. And this is what we want to see in Krishna consciousness. Okay, let me see what else I have here. Yeah. Yeah, so that brings it to the point of this anya bilasita sunyam, of serving the Lord without any other desire. And this comes out very, very strong. And also in the 17th chapter, which we read yesterday, there is a famous purport on the Harinam verse, the verse Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. So I just wanted to read that also. After this incident, the Lord ate raw rice given by Suklambra Brahmachari, and explained very elaborately the import of the Harinam sloka mentioned in the Brihad Naradiya Purana. Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, 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 gatir anyata. In this age of Kali, there is no other means, no other means, no other means for self-realization than chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name, chanting the holy name of Lord Hari. In this age of Kali, the holy name of the Lord, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, is the incarnation of Lord Krishna. Simply by chanting the holy name, one associates with the Lord directly. Anyone who does this is certainly delivered. This verse repeats the word eva, certainly, three times for emphasis. And it also three times repeats Harinama, the holy name of the Lord, just to make common people understand. Kevala sabda punarapi nischaya karana. The use of the word kevala only prohibits all other processes, such as cultivation of knowledge, or jnana, practice of mystic yoga, performance of austerities, and fruitive activities. And then, so, purport. So our Krishna consciousness movement stresses the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra only, whereas those who do not know the secret of success for this age of Kali
unnecessarily indulge in the cultivation of knowledge, the practice of mystic yoga, or the performance of fruitive activities, or useless austerities. They're simply wasting their time and misleading their followers. When we point this out very plainly to an audience, members of opposing groups become angry at us. But according to the injunctions of the Shastras, we cannot make compromise with these so-called jnanis, yogis, karmis, and tapasvis. When they say they are as good as we are, we must say that only we are good and that they are not good. This is not our obstinacy. It's the injunction of the Shastras. We must not deviate from the instructions of the Shastras. This is confirmed in the next verse of Chaitanya Charitamrita. So it's again a very famous purport of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is like totally going against the spirit of the time, you know, like of the world, right? Because the whole world is kind of growing out of this, at least there is a kind of a mood, you know. We should now, as modern man, we should beyond this sectarianism of the past, right? We should just be open, and in this world where borders are, what is the meaning of a border? You know, when you have jumbo jets, right? So many cultures are mixing now. So we have to learn to appreciate each other's point of views, and you'll meet so many people in the world, right? And time again, we are being confronted with this, that yes, we are good, you are good, all is good, etc. And then here's Prabhupada. Bang, right? So it's a classical purport in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's you can note it down. It is Adi Lila 17:24. And it's an important purport for any preacher in this movement. We cannot step over it. It's there. It's our duty. It's a direct order. We have to tell them straight. Now, Prabhupada himself was very very strong on this point. We know many examples where he bashed different philosophies. Christians, you know, wouldn't give him a break. There was no such thing as speaking about the common ground. It was just no meat eating, no meat eating. Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not kill, again and again. Even in that conversation with this French cardinal, the man is trying. Well, but, you know, all right, leaving this aside for a moment, this animal slaughter, there are many more basic principles in religion, such as, you know, the basic concept of love, right? And it's just, again, there is no question of love or religion or religious principles as long as one is killing. And he just kept on hammering the point. So it's a significant purport. I thought we couldn't miss it. So I think then I'm ready to go on with like some description of pastimes, unless there is a response to this point. So, Lord Chaitanya, when he had deeply contemplated that people would pay obeisances to him if he was a sannyasi, and that by paying obeisances to him, they would become purified from their offensive mentality, and that in this way they would become eligible to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya was thinking how to make them pay obeisances. And then he thought, if I take sannyas, they'll pay obeisances. So in this way, Lord Chaitanya became determined to take sannyas. And so at one point, the Lord was determined to do it, and he asked this. He told a few devotees about it, only a handful, but most of the devotees had no idea. Since Lord Chaitanya had revealed his transcendental identity,
There was a whole group of devotees who were around him and who were totally dependent upon his presence for their spiritual life. They had all along been Vaishnavas, but now that the Lord had revealed his transcendental identity, they had totally become devotees of Lord Chaitanya. And they were just, their only worshipable deity was Lord Chaitanya, and nothing but Lord Chaitanya. Yeah, we'll get to that a little later. So, when Lord Chaitanya left to take sannyas, that was inconceivable. It was just destroying everything, right? And when the news spread, it was something like what we know about that pastime. I'm looking at the painting where Akrura is taking Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, and the gopis are, some are already fainting, some are holding the chariot. It is said that the cowherd boys were lying unconscious in the forest. The Yamuna stopped flowing. All the trees were withering in Vrindavan, and everyone was just totally like in separation. So the same thing happened when Lord Chaitanya was taking sannyas. And a few devotees were asked to assist him. One was Chandrasekhar Acharya. And it was unbearable to them to see that Lord Chaitanya's beautiful hair was being shaved, right? So anyway, all that was happening. And then the actual initiation took place. And one little nice detail from Chaitanya Bhagavat is that description how Lord Chaitanya is asking Kesava Bharti. He said, "Last night I had a dream. And I was dreaming that actually the ceremony was being performed. And during that ceremony, the following mantras were being spoken. Are these the correct mantras? Are these the mantras?" And then Kesava Bharti said, "Yes, these are the mantras." So actually, it is said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu initiated Kesava Bharti in the correct mantras, and not Kesava Bharti Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Well, that's a little secret thing that was going on. It's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, and for him, that was a very ecstatic moment. Because although we discussed that he took sannyas more or less out of a strategy and seemed that he wasn't very much attached to it at all, that wasn't the case. Once he took fully, in full spirit, and he took it in the mood of total surrender to Krishna. And at that point, he went to he wandered around, and he wound up in the land of Radhadesh, there where the Ganges doesn't flow. And when he was in that land of Radhadesh, which is also the land where Lord Nityananda appeared, when he was there, he was totally absorbed in chanting the holy name of the Lord and remembering the Lord. And he was now, as a sannyasi, also in the mood of a preacher, very much. So wherever he was just calling out, chant, chant, chant. And but when he was in this land of Radhadesh, people didn't chant. Huh? So after some time, he began to notice that there wasn't so much response. He felt that this place is very impious. It's not a nice place at all. Why did I come here? And why is it? And he concluded that it was because the Ganges wasn't flowing there. So he decided to go back to the Ganges. And it said that at that time, the Lord turned around. What I forgot to mention was that Lord Chaitanya, after taking sannyas, was chanting a mantra from Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a famous mantra, because the Lord adopted this mantra after his sannyas. It became known as the sannyas mantra of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, and all sannyasis are meditating on this mantra, which is etam sastaya paratmanistam adyasitam purvatamer mahatpi aham tarisyami durantaparam tamomukundangri niseveyeva. That mantra is Let me see where it was mentioned.
Huh? Nine. It's there on the paper. I already wrote it. Eh? Good. No, okay. No, it's, I don't need the number. I wanted you to have it. But if it's there in the paper, then it's okay. So that number is nice, but the meaning is even nicer. And if I quoted it there, then we can read the translation, because I'm not good in memorizing things at all. So memorizing translations is not my thing. As a Brahmana from Avantidesh said, I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by the previous acharyas who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord, Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So only by devotional service, only by fixing on the lotus feet of Krishna, can one cross the ocean of material misery or of nescience. So again, same thing. It is anyabhilasita sunyam. It is just only devotional service, nothing but that. So that is, it comes back in so many ways, again and again, this same point. That we have to come to this this point of just satisfying the desire of Krishna. So, Lord Chaitanya, after noticing that in Radhadesh people were not chanting Hare Krishna, was not very happy, and some devotees, the ones who were there during the sannyas initiation, were also following Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu turned around and went back, he suddenly went so quick, no one could keep up with him, except Lord Nityananda. And they ran ahead through the fields, and all the other devotees stayed behind. And then when they were coming closer to the Ganga, they met these nice cowherd boys. And Lord Chaitanya saw them, and he asked them also, chant, chant. And the boys were chanting immediately. So Lord Chaitanya became very happy when he heard them chanting, and he said that, oh, just see these nice boys. This is due to the breeze of the Ganges, right? So see how nice it is to live under the breeze of the Ganges or the breeze of the Yamuna. That is in itself makes us already chant Hare Krishna. It's very nice. That's Chaitanya Bhagavat. Anyway, then Lord Chaitanya became overwhelmed by ecstatic love because these boys had chanted. And that pastime is also described in the CC here. And Nityananda, he, seeing that Lord Chaitanya was becoming overwhelmed by ecstatic symptoms, he took advantage of the situation and he approached these cowherd boys and he said, do you see that sannyasi? You can see that he's not acting really very normal, right? Maybe a little confused. Something's wrong with him. Therefore, you know, when he will ask you for the way to Vrindavan, you just tell him that it is that path along the Ganges. Right? So the cowherd boys were looking and saying, yeah, he looks confused. It definitely looks like something wrong with him. All right, yes, we'll tell him. Then Lord Nityananda just disappeared. Lord Chaitanya didn't even notice it. He was so ecstatic. And when he asked, where is Vrindavan? The boys pointed that direction and he just went there. And he was just walking and the path was going in the direction of the Ganges. Lord Chaitanya was walking it in the ecstasy of love of God and he had no sense of time as he was walking down the path, right? For him, you know, a moment seemed to be like 12 years or more and all that, or sometimes it just passed like that. So the Lord had no idea of time and place. He was simply walking along the path that the boys were showing. Meanwhile, Nityananda went ahead and met there with Chandrasekhar Acharya, also known as Acharya Ratna, the jewel of Acharyas. And he told him to go to the house of Advaita Acharya and to announce that the Lord was on the way. Then Advaita Acharya immediately made arrangements
to spread this news all over and invite all the devotees to his house. And he even sent a palanquin to bring Mother Sachi. Meanwhile, Lord Chaitanya was walking along in his ecstasy, and he came to the Ganges and thought he had come to Vrindavan. Jumped in the Ganges, swimming around, lost his clothes in the process, except for the kopins. And then when he came out of the water, he saw Advaita Acharya on a boat. And he said, Advaita Acharya, what are you doing here in Vrindavan? How did you know I was in Vrindavan? Yeah, it's famous. All. Anyway, Advaita Acharya then said, my lord, wherever you are is Vrindavan. Offered him dry cloth, right? So slowly, Lord Chaitanya began to realize something is wrong here. This is not Vrindavan, right? Advaita Acharya, wherever I am is Vrindavan. And it began to dawn upon him that it was the Ganges and that Lord Nityananda had cheated him. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya said, don't worry. Don't worry, actually the Yamuna flows here because in this part of the Ganges, actually along the bank, the Yamuna merges and the Yamuna is flowing along this bank. So it was the Yamuna where you took your bath. So it was perfectly right. He said, anyway, since you've taken sannyas, now since 3 days, 3 days have gone by, and all that time you didn't beg any alms yet, right? So you please give me the honor to beg alms from me. In my house, we have just cooked a little sack and a little bit of rice, just suitable for a renunciant. You please come and take prasadam in my house. Right? So then they went to the house of Advaita Acharya. And then there was a meeting again with all the devotees. And when Mother Sachi arrived, well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu broke to pieces. Right? He broke to pieces. I mean, he just became emotionally heartbroken and said, how could I have done this? How could I have given up my mother? I mean, she who has done everything for me, her love is unlimited. How could I just give her up? It's inconceivable. I was mad. Why did I do this? Why did I take sannyas? But, and then Mother Sachi also was totally overwhelmed and brokenhearted. But then Nimai said he was hungry. So then Mother Sachi went to cook. So she got over her distressed state and cooked. And whatever she cooked, it was inconceivable. It is described that whatever she cooked was more ecstatic than anything she ever cooked before, because now she knew that these were a few stolen moments. And she knew that this would be the last time that she was able to cook for Nimai like this. So this time she cooked like inconceivable. And all the devotees that were getting that prasadam were just like, oh, never tasted anything like it. Anything so transcendental, so amazingly surcharged with ecstasy. And there were great kirtans and it became an incredible festival there in the house of Advaita Acharya. So it's very nice that We have a Lord who expends himself, and then that other form of the Lord cheats the first one. Right? I mean, that's pretty far out in our philosophy. Where do you find such a thing? Only in Krishna consciousness do we have that. And why is this one feature of the Lord cheating the other? That's very interesting. We see that here there are two purposes being fulfilled. One purpose is that the Lord is setting the perfect example for sannyas. All throughout, he's maintaining it very, very strictly, never deviating once, and setting like a totally 100% strict standard for sannyas. And then, but we see that Lord Nityananda, he is desiring to reveal the transcendental side of Lord Chaitanya, and he's interested in his transcendental relationship with his devotees. He's not interested in establishing the principles of Dharma. Paritranaya sadhanam vinasyasa duskritam dharma samstarpanatya sambhavami yuge yuge. That, you know, maybe there
even in the pastimes of the Lord to establish principles of religion. But Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda is interested that Lord Chaitanya is reciprocating with his devotees and therefore cheats him and somehow or other brings him back in the company of the devotees. And then what can the Lord do? Then he cannot just walk away. That's impossible. Right? Of course, after some time, after some days, he presents his problem to Mother Sachi especially, because she's in charge, you know, like, I mean, of the situation. All the other devotees, their attachment for the Lord doesn't compare with the attachment of Mother Sachi, and everyone accepts it like that. She's his mother. She's the principal voice in the whole matter. So then Mother Sachi, Lord Chaitanya presents his problem to her and says, what can I do? Now I've taken sannyas. If I will stay here with my family members and my friends, I will be criticized. So what can I do? How do I resolve this? I mean, I want to stay, but I have taken sannyas. So what do I do? That's when Mother Sachi asked him to go to Navadvip, because she said that, to Jagannath Puri. Because Jagannath Puri and Navadvip are like two rooms in one house. How the pilgrims of Navadvip are always on the way to Puri, and the ones from Puri are always coming to Navadvip, because both are holy places. So she thought, in this way I'll get some news from Nimai. So it's very nice to see how these things are being resolved, and how the Lord is actually more concerned with his devotees, in satisfying the devotees. And yet, he is not breaking the principles of Dharma. So this is the very beginning of the Lord's taking sannyas. And, I'll see. Maybe there are some questions or some comments. Sannyas is actually meant to bring one to the Paramahansa platform. That is the purpose of it. And so the pre-Paramahansa stage is the Parivrajak stage, or the traveling preacher. Whereas the Paramahansa has come to the stage of being totally absorbed in remembering the Supreme Lord and his transcendental pastimes. So, therefore, it is certainly not in contradiction with the principles of sannyas to retire from preaching and to be absorbed in the Paramahansa stage. However, Prabhupada said that for the sake of preaching, even such a Paramahansa comes down to the second-class platform of a preacher, a Madhyamadikari. But when the Uttama Adhikari comes down to the Madhyamadikari platform, that's only externally that he comes down. Internally, he doesn't come down at all. We see that also in Prabhupada. Internally, he didn't come down at all. He was totally absorbed in Krishna Prem. And therefore, his preaching becomes also very potent. But at that stage, it doesn't really matter. So Prabhupada could have done either. He could have preached, or he could have not preached, and he could have just been absorbed. And both would have been perfect, right? Still, because this is the particular age of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, everything, there is that special spirit of preaching is very much present. And Prabhupada really displayed that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, however, even in Puri, always adhered strictly to standards of sannyas. And we should also understand that besides preaching the glories of the holy name, right, and making everyone chant wherever he went, like on his tour of South India, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was converting huge quantities of people.
he was chanting, dancing, and people that saw him started chanting, dancing, and they went back to their village, and then the whole village was overwhelmed by love of God, and in this way, like a wave, Krishna consciousness spread. But we should understand that what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu displayed in Jagannath Puri is also preaching. But this is more preaching to the devotees. So the first portion of preaching is really establishing the process. Or like we see that in the Madhya Lila, we could say the emphasis is more on the process, more on Abhideya, right? And he's teaching Abhideya. But in the Antya Lila in Puri, he is actually teaching Prayojana, which is for us. So he's really teaching the devotees how to go further and really what it means to enter into the mood of the gopis of Vrindavan, of Gopi Bhartapada Kamalayora Dasana Dasana Das, of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the gopis of Vrindavan. So it's also preaching, but it's more intimate preaching on another level. But we should understand that throughout his life, everything the Lord did had a preaching purpose. So just as earlier in the lecture, we're discussing the point that while the Lord is engaging in his external preaching by spreading the holy name to every town and village, he's also simultaneously having his internal meditation. So while the Lord is having his internal experience of experiencing the mood of Srimati Radharani, he simultaneously also has his external meditation of preaching. Right? He's also teaching and preaching at the same time. His entire lifetime is in the context of teaching. Right? Everything he does, also in Puri, same thing. At least, that's my understanding, for whatever it's worth. Uh-huh, yes, we can. Two rooms in the same house. It is true that in Navadvipa in particular, we see how Sankirtan is coming about when it's out of the house of Srivas Thakur, it's spilling over and just becomes this huge mass protest march to the house of the Chantkazi, with so many people partaking, all carrying torches, and it's said that the light from those torches alone was as bright as the sun, and the mridangas that were being heard all together was like the clapping of thunder. So that was a kirtan party. So definitely Navadvip is the home of Sankirtan. And from there, Krishna consciousness spread all over the world. We were reading it yesterday as the end of chapter 17. And basically what the point was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that point had been chanting Gopi, Gopi, because he was himself in the mood of a Gopi. And then one student had come and had criticized him for it and said, you know, what kind of mantra is that? That's not bona fide. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then had become very upset and even blasphemed Krishna, you know, because he was in the mood of a gopi, and then chased this student. So afterwards, the Lord was thinking that they're making so many offenses against me. But if they'll pay obeisances to me, then they'll become purified from these offenses. So for that reason, paying obeisances to the Lord on the strength that he was a sannyasi actually meant they'll be paying obeisances to the Supreme Lord, get purified from the offenses, and in that way they can begin to take to the process of devotional service. Yeah, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's moods are changing. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of the Supreme Lord, and sometimes he's in the mood of the devotee. So he's not always the devotee. No, many times Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in the mood of the Supreme Lord. Like yesterday also, we read how he asked Srivas to recite the Vishnu Sahasranam
And when the name of Nrisimha was chanted, then Lord Chaitanya just became Nrisimha. He was the Supreme Lord in the mood of Nrisimha. He wasn't like a devotee acting out the role of Nrisimha. He was Nrisimha. That was the scary part of it. That's why everyone became totally fearful of him when he was Lord Nrisimhadev. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, many times went in different moods like that, where he was in the mood of the Supreme Lord. So his moods were alternating, sometimes in the mood of a devotee, sometimes in the mood of the Supreme Lord. No. So that's not a contradiction. He was both. For different purposes, to show that he was the Supreme Lord, to at the same time he came to teach the devotees the essence of bhakti, and he was the object of that bhakti, and in that relationship he taught. Right? So he didn't just teach how to worship the deity of Krishna or how to chant the holy name. No, very refined teaching was going on in the relationship with him. And then we see how the devotees themselves are like, how they totally accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Like, for example, Shivananda Sen is being kicked by Lord Nityananda in the chest, and at that time he is ecstatic. And he's just ecstatic. He's so happy that he's being kicked. And or Srivas Pandit in his house, the kirtan's going on, and his son dies during the kirtan, and he doesn't even want to disturb the kirtan because the Supreme Lord is having a kirtan. Why would you disturb that, you know? So like that, we see how the devotees are relating to him as the Supreme Lord. And he's also relating in return as the Supreme Lord many times. So there's no contradictions, just he's showing both moods at the same time. Else have a response? I would say that we used to have a very narrow concept of what preaching was. We used to think that preaching was only, you know, that you go to someone and you just sit him down and you don't let him move and you just tell him straight in the face, you know, chanting of the holy name is the only way and nothing else, you know, everything else is maya, waste of time, and, you know, surrender, kind of shake him while he's not listening, etc. Nowadays, we begin to see that there are many ways to preach, and we can also see that Prabhupada had different approaches at different times. So it is not always necessary to immediately tell everyone in the first encounter that everything you do is bogus, is useless, only chanting Hare Krishna. We can also show the superiority of Krishna consciousness. We should not ourselves think that everything is on an equal level. We should always remember very well that things are not on an equal level, and live the superiority of Krishna consciousness. And I think that our movement has just come to that phase, right, where the days of propaganda became a little hollow. We began to feel that we have a lot of propaganda, but we do not have the quality within, right, to actually show it by the superior consequences and results of all this practice. And now the main contemplation in our movement is more in that direction, in trying to get more depth, more quality in terms of our own genuine spiritual strength. And with that, we have also developed like a mood of like, well, let us appreciate more, etc. Still,
this purport of Prabhupada is very strong, and we cannot neglect it. Although we may be gentlemanly and respectful to others, the time may come that we are forced to assert the philosophy of Krishna consciousness as the only true philosophy. Otherwise, we would be selling our principles, and we would actually, with this, cover our hearts with offense. So for that we have to watch. But in general, the particular form in which we preach can have different approaches. Like Prabhupada was very happy with his scientists preaching, but wanted them also to present it in a scientific way, which meant they have to do it according to a certain etiquette, which is different from what Prabhupada as the Acharya displayed. As the Acharya, Prabhupada just stood up for straight Krishna consciousness and gave it straight. So, but I myself, I obviously prefer that way. That's why I took the sannyasa ashram, which is the ashram for that. And it is the ashram to speak out clear and straight for as it is, and no compromise. In other social positions, one may be, one may present this same conclusion that Prabhupada is pointing out, that if they say they're as good as we are, one may present that with tact, but one can never compromise about the conclusion. Then we would have gone too far. Well, ultimately, it appears that many of these views, plurality of views, are also there within Krishna consciousness. So ultimately, it's not the plurality that we want to change, but certainly we would like to link all consciousness with Krishna consciousness. And then plurality can be there. Just like we see our nice Manipuri Vaishnavas doing their Manipuri style everything, their Manipuri Krishna consciousness, and it's refreshing and inspiring to see different kind of Krishna consciousness than Bengali Krishna consciousness. And yet it's so Krishna conscious. I just saw them in Spain, and it was very impressive. And they were into it, you know. The whole group came to Spain, and they wanted to do Hari Nam with their drums in the street, and like jumping in big circles. And so that was their big macho dancing. And then there was very refined rasa dance in the temple. And the whole temple was filled with a big audience, and they were doing the dance with their back to the audience because they were facing the deities. I thought, this is great. This is it, you know. This is how it should be done, for the deities, not for the people. How upset was Prabhupada when there was a picture of a drama performance and, you know, like the actors with their back to the deities. Who authorizes? The GBC. Call the GBC, right? The whole GBC had to come to his room for this, and it was just us. So it was so nice to see how cultural it was, and how pure this Manipuri Krishna consciousness. So plurality, yes, but not plurality in contradiction with Krishna consciousness. We want to root it out, destroy it, crush it. And all that. Right? Like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, we want to crush this material civilization. Crush it. Crush. Yes, what can we do? What do you think? You're not coming? Yes, it's time to stop. It's your turn.